Hi, everyone. This is the How to Lower Your Tax Bill podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Hutchins. I'm a financial and tax advisor in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And the goal of this podcast is to help you listeners get educated on different tax strategies that you can implement to improve your tax situation immediately. Each episode, we'll break down useful tax tips you can use to save money, no matter what your personal or business income situation. Because our motto is, keep more of what you earn. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of How to Lower Your Tax Bill. I am your host, Terrence Hutchins, and I am once again with my now co-host, Tamia Kelly. Say hi, Tamia, to the people.
Hey, y'all. Hey, good people. What's up? I'm back.
So we are in the midst of tax filing season, so the deadline is fast approaching. So hopefully you guys are filing on time to avoid unnecessary penalties and interest from the IRS. And today we're going to go over some common misconceptions that people have as it relates to tax deductions, bad advice that they take that may not be bad advice, but it may not be in context of their situation. And then just giving you some thoughts on strategies to help you implement as you are making tax decisions. And many times it's you're making a life decision that has a tax consequence and you're not really factoring in that tax consequence until after the fact. So things that you might need to stop and pause to be aware of so that you'll make better decisions. And as we say, keep more of what you earn. And so I thought about this social media video and the guy was talking and it was basically a comedy sketch, if you call it that. And he essentially was just saying, oh, you could just write it off. Oh, that's fine. We could just write it off. All right.
Okay.
And you hear that dialogue from people as far as, oh, I can, you know, that's fine. No, you could write off on your taxes. And so Tamia, tell me a little bit about what your thoughts were before you kind of got into the profession on, you know, what is a write-off and how did that impact you when you are going to file?
Okay, so Terrence, as I always like to say, I once was blind and now I see. And I, too, was a person to just say write it off. But in my defense, the reason why I was like that is because I've been in insurance for over 20 years and I would have customers who were wealthy and they would wait until the last quarter of the year to start making these purchases and doing all these things. And I heard write it off a lot. I didn't know. I did not know, Terrence. Why do you always put me on blast like this? I didn't know people. I did not know. Okay. And so I thought you could write stuff off. I thought you could write everything off. So, I mean, that was my take too. Write it off. Keep the receipt. Keep the receipt. Just, you know, put it in your shoebox. And give it to your tax person at the beginning of the year. Bada boom, bada bing.
It is funny you say that because, you know, when I first started in the financial industry and I didn't really have a tax background, I would hear about other advisors who were, you know, pretty well off. And they would say, oh, yeah, you know, I buy a car at the end of the year, right? So I can not pay taxes. And on the surface, I was like, oh, man, that sounds really smart. But as I've gotten more education, it's a matter of, well, was that really a good decision? Or did you just buy something that you may not have needed to pay for taxes you should have planned for ahead of time?
Probably the latter.
No, not to sound cynical. And not that there isn't space to do those things. But the moniker you always hear is don't let the tax tail wag the dog. And as it comes to your personal or even business decisions, let it be a good personal or business decision first. And then hopefully the tax consequence is positive. Or, hey, how can we lessen the tax negative consequence of it? Or how can we enhance the tax positive consequence of it so that ultimately it makes it even a better decision outside of what was the immediate tax impact? Okay. A few things that I wanted to get into that people talk about just writing it off. All right.
Right.
And I've heard this a lot after the Tax and Jobs Cut Act. So prior to 2018, you had a much lower standard deduction. So there was a lot more things that could have been written off just because the amount that the government taxed you on automatically was just going to be higher. Now the standard deduction is so much higher to where some of the things that you might pay for now don't really count towards your taxes because the IRS is already giving you credit for that stuff. As we've talked about on a tax episode.
And I think that's the last episode, you're right, because that standard deduction is so high. And I think a lot of people, when you think about writing things off, you really want to consider those standard deductions because it is so high that some of these things that you want to write off may not tip you over into that being able to itemize bucket, right?
Exactly.
Because is not enough. So some of the things that Terrence mentioned earlier, you really got to know what you're trying to deduct and what you're trying to write off, because you may just stay under the standard deductions and not make it to the Schedule A for sure.
So a few things that I hear consistently, and you can let me know kind of what your perspective was, is with W-2 employees that work from home. So this is especially, you know, with COVID, obviously everything shut down and everyone was working from home that was working for the most part. And they were thinking, hey, you know what? Now that I work from home, I got a desk. I'm using up more utilities. I should be able to get a tax benefit for this. And prior to 2018, there was an avenue to potentially get that. It was called a miscellaneous itemized deduction. And so when you work from home, that was considered a business expense as an employee. And so your employer has the option to say, hey, if in order for you to do your job and you have to incur costs out of your own pocket to do your job, we have the ability to reimburse you for those expenses. If we don't reimburse you, then they're going to be considered unreimbursed.
Right.
At that point, you can then potentially write them off on your tax return. And so prior to 2018, there was a 2% threshold. So let's say you made $100,000, 2% was $2,000. So if you had expenses over that threshold, then you can deduct those as an itemized deduction. However, after 2018, that went away outside of basically gambling losses. And so a lot of people thought they could write that stuff off, but they can't anymore. And then I even have people where they think, oh, if I write, some people were doing home improvements. Right. Like, I'm going to do a home improvement. And because it goes into the value of my house, I'm going to use that. And I'm thinking, well, the IRS doesn't care about your swimming pool. They like the fact that you're investing in the economy and you're helping employ people and you're spending money, but they don't care about your swimming pool and they're not going to give you a tax deduction for it. Unless there's a medical reason, like your doctor said, hey, for your health, you need a swimming pool in the backyard.
Right. So let me go back though. I remember, I'm not going to say the insurance company name, but in the state of California, California is a very funny state to be in, by the way. But in the state of California, no shade to anybody living in California. They just have different laws. Okay. But in the state of California, during 2020, mm-hmm. there was a couple of insurance carriers who employed people during that time. And their employees, their remote workers, were purchasing all these stand-up desks, ergo, all these different things. And the mm-hmm. employer did not reimburse them. And mm-hmm. they came together and actually sued their employer. And they were required there in the state of California to reimburse them for those expenses. So for you all who are the W-2 employees, and if you are purchasing things for your home office, one, I would say, because I used to be a W-2 employee, I told you guys I once was blind, but now I see. I would certainly say inquire with your manager, your people leader, whatever you want to call them, to see what you can be reimbursed for. So you don't get upset when you can't deduct it from your taxes because you're a W-2 employee. And you're not a business owner. Okay. So
got it.
I think I would give y'all that little tidbit of just check first before you spend the money that you don't have, because that's another misconception of the write-off is that I'm going to spend it right now and I'm going to get it back.
Well, right.
You may not get it back. So just check and see what you can be reimbursed for. And then if you want to juice up your office, that's your own expense.
Right. That's a very good point. I didn't know. I'm sure, you know, you can tell me offline, the insurance company. Now, a few of the things we were talking about before was like with charitable contributions. Mm-hmm. And I had a client where they actually weren't my tax client. They were a financial client. And every year they would give away stuff and they would make donations. And I would have to get them to understand, yeah, you're going to give away money. But number one, the tax deduction that you're getting is only going to be at the top of your tax bracket.
Right.
So if you're in a 12 or a 22% tax bracket, that's basically just buying something on sale that's 12 or 22% off. Right. And so it's like, well, if it's not a good purchase, just because you gave me a 12% discount doesn't make it a good purchase, right? Like right. How much of a discount would I need to get to buy something that I don't need, right? It's kind of the math that I'd have to do in my head. Now, there might be something where, hey, if it's enough, it would make sense, right? But I would have to quantify that. And I think a lot of people, they don't quantify it. They just equate write-off to, oh, this is a good decision without actually quantifying, well, what is the actual value of this?
Right.
Because even
right.
now, I work with a lot of business owners, and sometimes accountants traditionally have looked at, hey, how can we lower your pain today? You know, right. like you go to the doctor, you came to me for a solution. well, I'm going to just give you some medicine to solve the issue that you're dealing with today versus, well, what are some lifestyle changes you can make that will actually put you in a better position in the long run? And so sometimes it makes more sense not to actually get the deduction because the cash in hand might be more valuable to you. It can be used for something else that would be more beneficial. But getting back into the charitable contributions, so I'll let you take this as far as, you know, how you think about the whole goodwill thing.
So for me and the people that I typically see, a lot of people give, you know, church, they pay their tithes and offering. I pay my tithes and offering, right? Which is good. Pay your tithes, pay your offering. I would also say make sure your church house is 501c3. They have a tax designation that will allow you to even consider or try to consider using this on your taxes. I would also say for those who love to give to the Salvation Army and love to drop off, you know, just different things. Here is what I'm saying. Listen to me, Linda. All right. So I had two different customers this year, Terrence. The one was like, hey, I gave like $10,000 to the Salvation Army worth of stuff. I was like, oh, good. Like, give me your receipt. Yeah. I didn't have no receipt. She was like, I just drove through the little donation line and they gave me this letter. I said, oh, no. That doesn't count, people. That doesn't count. Especially for the Salvation Army and the Goodwill, they'll give you a form and then it's up to you to determine the value of the items that you gave. But here is the gag, is that when you go onto the Salvation Army's website or the Goodwill's website, what they value those items is different than what you may value them. So you want to make sure, one, that you actually get a tangible receipt based on the goods that you've given them. They will give you a receipt with an itemized list of the things that you gave. You have to do your due diligence. You can't just give your tax preparer a list of things and say, yeah, I gave it without any documentation. So you need documentation. I would also say to you, tithe payers, get that documentation from your church house as well, right? They should be able to give you some type of list too. But no, for you all that like to give to the Goodwill, I can't just throw a blanket number on your tax return. We need documentation, so much so that they require, I forget the form number, Terrence will tell me, but so much so that we require a form to fill out a detailed list of the things that you gave when the non-cash items, when it's over $500 for sure.
Right. That's an 8283 for those who are taking notes out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what about Sister Johnson? You know, she got a root canal, but she don't have the money to pay for it. And so she sent a GoFundMe to help her. She's in need. You know, what if you give money to Sister Johnson?
Oh, we're going to lift her up in prayers and we're going to give it to her. But that's not a charitable contribution. I know y'all upset because a lot of y'all give to those GoFundMes, right? Mm-hmm. And y'all listen, Linda, listen. Guess what? Them funeral expenses too that y'all donating to, that's not considered a charitable donation because it's not a charitable organization. Okay, so please, sir, ma'am, find a way, possibly donate through your church so that your church can give. But yeah, that GoFundMe, it's giving no. It's a no from me. We can't include it.
So I mean, it's hope, dashing hopes and dreams out there. One tip at a time.
Listen, I'm just trying to help us for 2025. We can still get right. It's only April. We can still get right and do different for 2025 tax year.
So there's a few other things that I see often, or I get questions often about, that I have to clear up with people. That could be sometimes when they look at making write-offs for their mortgage. I had a recent client who at the end of the year, he was closing on a house and he was told, hey, if you go ahead and pay these points on your mortgage, you'll be able to take advantage of this tax deduction. Well, we didn't have a conversation ahead of time because I would have told him, hey, go ahead and close in January versus December, because the value of those points will then be counted. Plus, you'll have a full year of interest on your mortgage. And then that will just be more beneficial instead of you like barely squeaking over the standard deduction limit. So even if he takes a standard deduction, let's just say that without doing anything, he would have got $30,000 of tax deductions with his standard deduction versus if he had barely squeaked over and he only got $31,000. Well, that would effectively only be a $1,000 benefit for maybe the $10,000 he paid out of pocket versus, hey, next year you'll actually get the full $10,000. So that extra $9,000 at your tax bracket would be the savings. And another thing that I get is people, when they first get married, they'll file separately. Yes. And 99% of the time, it does not make sense to file separate unless your partner doing something janky, which you probably should have worked out prior to getting married. But that's a whole nother podcast. If you don't feel comfortable filing jointly, then you probably need to assess your just the financial plan y'all have together.
Right.
Because you're costing yourself money filing separately in those situations. And other things that people do. So let's talk through a little bit about kind of some of the end of year stuff that I see people do that may or may not make sense, but you have to assess it to give it a dollar value. So like your HSA or IRA account. So this podcast will post right before the tax deadline. That's something that you can actually do is fund an IRA or an HSA up until the tax deadline, which is the 15th of April, most years.
Now, before you get into the HSA, I want to tie that back to you were talking about the home, buying a home and everything. One of the other things that some people think they can write off is the out-of-pocket medical. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned the HSA because some of our, if you are a W-2 employee, you could have an employer contributed HSA. And so if for those who want to just write off the medical, it has to be an unreimbursed expense, mm-hmm. meaning it's outside of what your employer has contributed. Like, say, if you have $2,000 in your HSA little debit card situation and you spend out of pocket cash money, not tied to anything that your employer is giving you, then we could possibly look at that. Right. We could possibly look at your medication and mm-hmm. just different things. And going back to the example that Terrence mentioned about the pool, right? Putting a pool in for medical purposes. So it's a lot of things to tie in, but you got to know the little nuances there, especially the unreimbursed piece. You don't get to double dip. You don't get to have this HSA benefit and also try to say this is out of pocket because technically it's not. So. Just wanted to plug that in. Take it away with the HSA situation.
So those are very good points because the IRS doesn't let you double dip really on anything. Okay.
Right.
Now, if you're a minister, they let you double dip, I guess, when it comes to your housing allowance and the stuff you can write off outside of that. So that might be something we can go through more in depth for our clergy people out there. But with the HSA, you can contribute to it, but you need to be aware that if I do put money in this HSA account, what is the actual tax value of it? So if I put, $4,000 in, I need to calculate at my tax bracket because if that $4,000, if I don't have a medical expense and I need the money, I'm going to pay a 20% penalty to get it out if it's not for a medical expense. So if I don't have a lot of liquidity, even though, yes, I don't want to pay the IRS, but I might be better off just paying the IRS their $1,000 and keeping the $3,000 extra that would have gone to the HSA potentially. But also just specific to the HSA, if you have an HSA at your employer, it would be better to just do it from your payroll deduction because it is a federal deduction when you put it on your tax return. But if you do it through your employer, you actually will also save on Social Security and Medicare taxes. So you'll get an extra 7.65% tax benefit from doing it in the HSA account. With an IRA, some employers allow you to do the deduction from there, but same concept. If that money is going to be tied up until you're 59 and a half, then you want to be aware that, okay, I can put it in here today, but if I need it prior to 59 and a half without an exception, I'm going to pay an extra 10% to get it back. So I'm going to get a tax benefit putting it in, but I'm going to have to pay an extra 10% getting it out. So those are things that are important to understand. And then lastly, the whole car situation. I say, okay, yes, let's take your car. Now, for people out there who say they use their car 100% for business, I would push back on that quite a bit relative to, I'm imagining you went to the store one time that it wasn't a business trip, right? Any car you buy, especially the Model X, that's the one they wanted to get, or at least they used to prior to Doge, but they wanted to get that Model X because it was, over 6,000 pounds. I could take the bonus appreciation, but I would say, hey, just remember that $1,200 a month you're paying in car payment, you're only going to get a benefit from that primarily in the first year. After that, the value of that tax deduction is going to diminish. So you need to have a plan to say, okay, if I do get this big tax write-off, how am I going to take advantage of this money? Because the IRS will recapture that in the future, or the value of it will decline, and I'm still gonna have a payment. So even though I'm paying $1,200 a month, the tax benefit may only be $4,000 in that next few years, or $5,000, or whatever it might be. So you're saying, hey, the payment I have isn't gonna match the tax benefit after the first year, and then I'm left with this high payment with very little tax benefit, and I'm end up paying money on, I'm end up paying taxes on money that's gonna look like profit, especially if you're a business owner. And so that's a concept I'll address on a future episode as far as cash flow and taxes and how you might plan ahead for that. But that's something to certainly keep aware of from that vantage point. So a couple other things before we wrap up. I want to go over maybe some missed opportunities. Tamia, you work in insurance, you said. So what was the first thing people always told you when it comes to your 401k as far as what you should do? What's kind of the common advice do you remember getting?
They said you need to get the full employer match. They right. would say, like, if your employer is matching dollar for dollar, up to 6%, up to 3%, whatever it is, you need to match it. You need mm-hmm. to take full advantage of it, mm-hmm. especially since it's a pre-tax.
That Got you're it. Into. For sure. And so, you know, you basically get the benefit of getting a tax exemption, plus you get the extra money from your employer. But I have seen people where, you know, I look at their W-2s and their code D says like $800. I'm looking at their box one wages and I'm like, well, you know, or box five, I guess you could say, to be more accurate. Hey, if you bump this up, especially if you work at a big company, they're probably giving you 3.5% to 5% yeah. or 6% max.
Yeah,
6%. So if you're putting in less than that, then not only are you missing out on the tax benefit, but you're also missing out on the match. And then to add insult to injury, if you're getting a tax refund, well, that was literally free money that you were basically saying, hey, I'm going to overpay the IRS. I'm going to wait for them to give me the money back.
Right.
When I could have just given it to my employer to put it into my retirement, got an extra tax benefit, and had the company match it. So you could literally have doubled your return plus gotten a tax benefit with a little bit of planning if yeah. you pay attention to those kind of things.
So I would say that's the key word, though, Terrence, is the planning piece, right? Again, people, I didn't know all the things. And so I actually was one of the people when I first heard 401k, because I've been working for many, many years. A lady never tells her age, but I've been working for a long time. And when the whole word 401k, when it populated in my mind, in my world, it was like, I need all my money. I need mm-hmm. all of my money coming back to me. So I was like, I'm going to give you $20 a month, right?
Right.
Not really truly understanding everything that you just explained, right? So if you all don't hear anything else, people, it is a benefit, not just in focusing on your refund at the beginning of the year, like we talked about in the last podcast, but also understanding your dollar, understanding how to make it work, understanding how taxes work, understanding it. Because to his point, if I was to donate the full amount, or not donate, but give the full amount, maximize employer match, I would see other benefits on my tax return. But if I'm just going to, we're not going to name names, but if I'm doing it myself, right, doing the tax return myself online, or going to these chains or whatever, I'm not getting the education or the planning that I need to make those decisions to better prepare me to really, truly understand it. So I say all that to say, people, is tax planning is important. Don't just focus on your refund, but focus on what tax implications your decisions are making for you.
For sure.
In the long run. Yeah.
So I'm going to give you guys a few things that I think are common missteps people make. And you can kind of give me your thoughts as well to me as we close out here. But a few things, like, I get people who say, all right, you know, I want to start a business. I need an LLC. Well, yes, the LLC doesn't have anything to do with your taxes, is what I have to normally instruct people. Those are two separate things. You set your LLC up at the state. You file your taxes with the federal government. So the federal government doesn't necessarily care that you have an LLC. An LLC does give you the ability to have different tax options, but having it alone does not impact whether you can write something off or not, or it doesn't give you extra tax benefits for having an LLC. So you might see that from the influencers out there that they give you that. Meals and travel, okay? Just because you and your wife talk about business and you own a business and y'all talk about business doesn't make that meal specifically a deduction.
Okay? Are you sure?
So there are ways to properly document the things that you have that do have a business purpose. So it's like, hey, have a board meeting, have an agenda, have it have the effect of an actual business meeting. if you want to audit proof what you're doing, okay? I get people that claim, I mean, their mama, they claim it, the kids, they claim it, the uncle, the brother, okay? Number one, this person, if they work, if they're an adult over the age of 24, or they're not your kid, if they work a job, chances are you probably not going to be able to claim them. So you have to say, hey, do they make more than $5,000? If they do, you're not going to be able to claim them. Secondly, if you provide more, or unless they're disabled, I should say, but if you don't provide more than 50% of their support, then you're not going to be able to claim them either, okay? And so that's something that you need to be aware of. And the benefit, it's really only $500 if you look at it.
Right. I would say this, the days are gone, people, when you can just get somebody's kid and put them on your tax return. Those days are gone. I hope that you are utilizing a tax preparer that is doing their due diligence. There are some questions that you have to answer that you mark off. And so if your refund, your return gets rejected, or they take your refund or whatever, don't look at your tax preparer. Look at yourself, ma'am, sir. Did you try to claim somebody else? But on a very serious note, we can't do that. Let's not. That was a big thing, and the IRS really cracked down on that. And so if you are divorced, you all need to figure that out. Who's going to claim the kids? I had a previous scenario like that. You need to make sure you have it written. This person, this ex-spouse is going to claim, this ex-spouse is going to claim. So all of those things needs to be hashed out when you get ready to file your return as it relates to your kids, your dependents, or, you know, even kids that you have adopted. I mean, all of those things need to be hashed out. Especially with that, because people think they're going to get rich from those child tax credits. You're not.
But make sure you're independent. It's funny. It's not a first come, first serve thing, you know. Right? And I've had clients where their siblings, you know, because they both chip in for mom, and one of them claim them, the other one doesn't. And I'm like, y'all had this big family drag out over $500. You know, like, not that that's. That may be a significant amount of money for some people, but it's not worth your relationship with your sibling over $500, right? So
especially,
you know,
when there's other things that can impact. If you're not the person who's claiming the dependent, there are other things that your tax preparer can help you in terms of decreasing your tax liability. Everything we just mentioned before, it's about your tax planning.
Right. A couple of other things I see, specifically with states that don't have state income taxes, like in Texas, where I am, people don't claim this the safe harbor for sales tax. If you're single, you know, the IRS will give you, I think it's about $1,600 just for that. So if you itemize your deductions, I see that on people's returns all the time. They don't take that standard amount. Or if they have multiple, you know, people in their house, it could be $3,000-$4,000. Where, hey, the government is giving you this with no documentation required, and you just didn't take it because you went to TurboTax. So it's like, your return was $50, but if you cost yourself $400, then that math didn't work out great for you. Also, some non-refundable tax credits, like the EV credit or the solar panels. One, with the EV credit, you have to look at your income. And then use EV, the amount of car can't be more than $25,000. So if you go to the dealership and they're selling you a $30,000 EV that's used, and they're like, oh, you can get a tax credit. Well, yes, you could if the car was below the threshold. Or, hey, you could write this off, or you get a tax credit. Well, they just say write off for everything. But you can get a tax credit if your income is below the threshold. And so if you're not aware of that, then don't necessarily listen to people who are giving you tax advice that may not know your situation. Or I have a client where they're older, and so they don't really pay a whole lot of taxes every year, but they bought these solar panels thinking they were about to get this 30% credit for the panels. And yes, they're able to get the credit, but their tax liability for the year might be $2,000. Right. Well, if you got this $30,000 tax credit or $20,000 tax credit, it's going to take 10 or 15 years to actually get it. Right. And so you may not have bought those solar panels if you had done some diligence and realized, what is the actual impact of this on my situation? And how is that going to make this purchase more worthwhile? So as I said,
basically what I hear you saying is make sure the math is mathing.
Exactly. And listen, you know, I don't give medical advice. I don't give dental advice, right? Outside of my personal experience, I can share with you my personal experience and how it impacted me personally, but I can't give you advice on stuff that I don't do or I'm not an expert at. And oftentimes people will listen to people they trust versus people that have more expertise in those areas.
Valid. valid point.
And so just be aware that the information you get may not always be, it may not even be inaccurate, but it may not be applicable to you in the scenario that it was given in. So make sure that, okay, if I hear something, I got to get the right context behind it so that ultimately I can apply it to my situation and put me in a better spot versus me having this expectation. Then I get disappointed after the fact because I didn't do my due diligence on the front end.
Right. Context is king, people. Context is king. Make sure it's applicable. So the next time you hear someone say, just write it off, I want you to pause before you make that purchase. First, we need to make sure that you can afford it, right?
Exactly.
And then we need to make sure it's something that's applicable to you, your situation, that you can actually, quote unquote, write off or take a tax deduction on.
So if you have any questions, you can send those to questions@logosfg.com. And we will answer some of those questions on future episodes, especially post-tax season, as far as, okay, what are some things you can do like mid-year, or what are some things that may occur that you need to check? Because oftentimes people come to me with stuff that happened, and then I'm having to try to figure out, what do we do with this after the fact? Or I want to do a 1031 exchange, but I already sold the property. Well, that doesn't really work. So what are some things that might be on your horizon that you need to plan ahead for? And those are things we can kind of give you tips around. All right. So any parting thoughts for our people before we wrap up, Tamia?
No, just make sure the math maths, people. It's not mathing out here in these tax streets. So just make sure it's mathing. That's all I got. Context is king. And make sure you have good tax planning. Remember, the tax year starts January 1st through December 31st. Not January 1st through April 15th. It's
Amen.
A full year thing. Tax planning is real, people. It will save you tears.
Amen. Well, cool. So as we always say, keep more of what you earn, and we'll talk to you guys next week.